everybody. Welcome back to Sell Performance Solutions. I'm Chris McCabe, your host. Brandon Young is our guest this week of Data Dive and Seller Systems. And of course, you're the creator and organizer and chief promoter of Camp Ecom, which is coming back around, right?
Yeah, Camp Ecom's fun. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. So May 18th to 21st. First, I want to make sure I get the details right. Cancun this year.
Yeah, we moved it from Orlando. The last 2 years have been in Orlando. Hotel is just okay. You know, it's tough to get to, you know, and then people are like, well, maybe we can move it to a resort and enjoy the beach. And instead of January, we moved it to May. So I don't know. It's an experimental thing. We'll see if it works.
I hear you. I love to experiment with our events. So I applaud you for trying new things, because otherwise people just get in the same rote every year. Same stuff, same place, right?
Yeah, you did Oregon, right? Like you did Bend?
Yeah, we did. Well, of course, we're here to talk about your event, not ours. My next one is in June in France.
Now you're doing France. Wow.
In France. I'll be putting more out shortly after this post, but because we're putting this up pretty quickly. But yes, in June in France, not Paris, in Lyon, Southeast France. But anyway, yeah, we did Oregon. We did New York last year, as you know. Since Anthony was a speaker, and this year we're doing France and we're mixing it up a little bit. I think it's great that you changed the location. I think that's good to keep it fresh.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how it goes. I think the all-inclusive side of it, the ability to break, we're experimenting right now because we have this schedule. We have to get at least 6 or 7 hours of intense workshopping in. Like the entire premise is obviously you're going to learn and work on your business. And instead of having a conference where people are just talking at you from stage, you retain 1% of it, you do none of it. But the goal is like you're actually in groups doing something, or you're in your hands and keyboard or in a worksheet actually doing something throughout those 7 hours each day. So one of the things I was thinking of, maybe we just do a morning session and then a giant siesta in the afternoon, like 3 hours to like you go enjoy lunch, go to the beach, take a nap. Right. And then come back and have an evening session that ends a bit later, like maybe 8 o'clock, and have a late dinner. So we're leaning towards that style, because the other option was we just start really late in the morning and then we go really late. But then it's still just a block of time and you got the beach calling you and stuff. So maybe we can split it up.
That's good. Like alternate on, off, heavy, light. Maybe that's good just to let the brain digest some of the content. And then you never know when some people are going to miss certain chunks, which might be the key sections, because they're networking privately and they're just continuing a conversation that they started during a break and they're not thinking about what they're missing, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is the first year. Last 2 years, we did not have any replays. We did not have a virtual ticket. And this year we decided to do that because we have 800 members in the inner circle. Many of them cannot make it, especially with tariffs, the uncertainty. A lot of people are busy even getting visas. We have a ton of Australian students, a ton of European students. And I'm like, getting all the way to Mexico is really expensive, really tough. And it's a 5-star resort. So the ticket's a little bit more expensive because it's all inclusive. So what I decided to do is like spend a little bit more on AV, record it. And then the other benefit of that is, as you saw last year, we just had the two rooms, the pre-launch and the post-launch workshops. And people on one side wanted to know what was going on in the other room. And if you miss it, you miss it. But this year we're going to give the replay for both sides. So that way, if like you're in the post-launch room, you're studying ads, you're studying traffic, then you can still get the product development side, which you need, right? Like you always have to be developing new products and launching. But a lot of people want to know the latest on the ad side, optimization side.
Yeah, well, for sure. Ad costs. Well, you mentioned tariffs, and then people are already juggling additional costs just to be Amazon sellers, whether it's fees or storage issues or paying more for ads, or even policy changes that cost them cash, right? There's all these challenges even before the tariffs kicked in, but now the tariff material is really hitting hard on top.
Yeah, tariffs. So tariffs are the big talk right now, just trying to figure out how to help people mitigate it. I just did a workshop and the average savings is between 40 and 60% on the tariff side for the different strategies that we're trying to help people with.
And was that switching sourcing? So you're going to have, are you going to have like a tariff expert, or are you going to have like how to save costs by changing sourcing? Are you going to have people talking about reducing ad spend? Probably not, right?
No, I mean, like, so ad spend, you should optimize for SEO. Like, that's always our strategy. But the main strategy that we're teaching around tariffs is the first sale doctrine, which is basically saying that if I'm making the best example maybe is a diaper bag, right? So your diaper bag factory is not necessarily rolling the material themselves, right? They're buying the materials. They're not making the zippers and the buttons, right? They're not buying that plastic waterproof side. The inner liner for the cooler pocket is not made by them. So what they're doing is they're buying that stuff, and the zippers and the buttons might cost them $1.50, but they're turning around and charging you $3. So what you're able to do is if you can get two sets of invoices set up, you have to do this very properly. Paperwork needs to be tight, but you can essentially pay tariffs just on that first sale from the original factory to your factory. And by the time you add up every component of your product, you can save a significant amount on your COGS, which is what the dutiable amount is. And there's some other strategies with the design of the product, the instruction booklets, the packaging. There's different things that are exempt that you have to kind of piece out as well.
That's what I figured. People would be slimming down their packaging. I don't know the percentages of how much you save. I mean, you save a little bit here and a little bit there, maybe add it all up. I'm assuming that's the webinar that you just did.
Yeah, I mean, it is reworking your product, getting more efficient, getting as lean as possible there. But also, you wrote the instructions, right? The instructions themselves are very cheap, and the factory got them printed somewhere. So, or probably didn't do it themselves, but they're just lumping it in with the COGS. If you buy those separately, you can save a significant amount of money on the tariffs as well, because like those can be removed from the COGS.
I guess sellers are just going to have to boot camp it up and educate themselves quickly on tariffs.
Yeah, if you've got stuff on the water, or you're about to ship on the water, you can defer some of the duties as well by using bonded warehousing. So it's another strategy. I just spoke to Spencer over at Bloomberg, and he quoted me on an article he just put out yesterday. And the strategy there is kind of just kick it down the road, or and only it helps your cash flow because you only pay for the duties as you release the goods. So you're releasing a couple pallets at a time to Amazon or to wherever you're going. Or let's say you decide to shift gears and ship the stuff from America to Europe or to Canada. You would never pay those tariffs, right? So you don't pay unless it actually leaves the bonded warehouse, which is essentially, it's just an international holding area. It doesn't technically enter the US yet.
That was my next question. You're going to talk a lot about Europe, because that's the funny thing about ours being set in Europe. Now there's this giant topic that we're going to have about people are going to sell more in Europe versus two months ago.
Yeah. Right? No. So it was an amazing revelation. So I went to Kevin King's Market Masters event. Really, really excellent style, the way that he does it. It's a hot seat. So he's charging a good amount of money for this, but I think it's extremely valuable. And even for the experts he brings in. So you've got a hot seat, someone sitting at the table, and then you've got 8 or 10 experts. You spend the first hour literally just asking questions. So they have a thesis, they have an issue, they have a problem, you learn about their business, but then only questions for the first hour. So you get the perspective of all these different experts who have different experiences and skill sets. And then after the hour, you start to hear advice from everybody about how they would tackle or what they recommend you do. And so it's a two and a half hour session where all these experts are really digging in and helping you with a problem. What was interesting, and even as an expert, I try to be the last one to even speak. I just want to listen to what everyone else is saying. I mean, I'm learning a lot because there's other really smart people at the table. And what was interesting is I had a student there who sells in Europe. They have an 8-figure business, and I didn't know their business, but I just happened to be there. And 9 of the $10 million they do in revenue is in Europe.
Wow.
And only one is in America, and they're struggling to break through in America, even though they have like 40% of the market in Europe. And what was interesting is like their COGS weren't good enough, their designs weren't good enough, their images weren't good enough, their content wasn't good enough to win in America, but they were dominating in Europe. Oh. So the level of what it takes to win in Europe is the bar is much lower. But a lot of the bigger sellers don't even bother going because it's such a small market. But what was an eye-opener for me, which was really interesting, is that I always thought it was one-to-one. So like, let's say Germany is 10% of the American market. Right. I thought that I would go through all of the effort of getting things translated, compliance, VAT, all this other crap to go get 10%. And it wasn't worth it. I would just rather launch another product on .com. The reality is, if I do that and I go through that, because I'm winning in America already, there's a very good chance I'm going to even take a much larger percentage of the market there. So even though it's 10% of the market, I own 10% of the 100% in America, I might own 30 or 40% of that 10% over there. So it's a much bigger market than I would than I was anticipating.
So yeah, I mean, the interesting, all the barriers to entry in Europe and UK, regulatory or otherwise, kept a lot of players out of that game up to this point. But now they're finally like motivated. If obsessive focus on the US market distracted them previously, they don't have that right now.
Yeah.
So they're finally motivated to sift through some of this regulatory material and sort out, you know, and I think there are some brands in Europe that have gotten a little comfortable and they feel like they're selling from a defended position, but now we're going to see if there's any challengers.
Oh, the biggest thing and the most constant thing is disruption in every market. It's just a matter of speed and when, right? So now, right, it's going to get faster and harder for them in Europe, those incumbents that are there.
Yeah.
And even in America, the strategy that I tell all of my students is you need to be disrupting yourself, right? Like you need to look at your product and understand what would someone do to make it better? What value can someone else come in and add? And then probably start working on a variation that's going to dethrone your hero, right? Just make it better. And if you just get comfortable, you're dead.
Yeah. Well, I know you're still telling people it's still safe to wade out into the waters and to start selling a brand, but are you saying the same thing, kind of like disruption? That's what
yeah,
it's about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whether you're new or old, it's the same problem.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think if de minimis goes away, the $800 loophole, that direct shipping loophole, if that goes away, that's a massive boon for Amazon sellers, right? That was why people were shopping on Temu and TikTok and AliExpress.
Yeah.
And I think that for the most part, now Temu and TikTok have fulfillment in the US. But what those sellers were doing is they were shipping smaller quantities into those fulfillment centers. Yeah. So they were avoiding tariffs. And so they could charge half the price or 60 or 70% of the price of the same exact product on Amazon. And it was super disruptive. And I think that if that de minimis goes away, Amazon is going to see a huge windfall from it because people trust Amazon. They trust Prime. They trust it more than those Chinese shopping sites.
Yeah. Do you think some new tier of US manufacturing will be created for like a leaner, cheaper type of manufacturing for certain kinds of products and people just try to figure out what those are and rush into that market as quickly as possible for resale on Amazon? Or is there no real way to get that going in a meaningful timeline?
It's a minimum of 6 to 12 months to get any type of manufacturing built, like meaningful, because you got machinery, supply chains, raw materials, like any really struggle to think of any type of product that you can make here outside of printed goods, supplements.
Something light.
Yeah, like supplements you can maybe do, but right. Even all the raw materials for all of those products are not made here, right? Like it's very rare. We're not rolling paper. We're still getting it from China. And, you know, wood, we were getting it from Canada, but now our leader has beef with our northern neighbors for some reason. And so now we're struggling even with that. So I really struggle to see what you could spin up and do. Injection molding, plastic, you still got to get it over there. The toy industry is getting decimated. I mean, that's my biggest brand. But the reality is you can't make toys anywhere else. Like, not meaningful quantities and to the quality that you can get in China. There's one city in China that I visit with 10,000 toy factories. And you go there and you got your selection of every toy that's made in the world. And you know, you've got European, very premium, expensive toys and wooden toys and educational wooden toys that are made in Germany, for example. But you're talking about a $40 puzzle set versus a $19 puzzle set.
Yeah. And it's double. You know, it's double.
Minimum.
I just read that article. He said essentially it would double the cost of toys.
Yeah. And so this is a tax on Americans. It's no different. I don't want to get political or anything. It didn't work coming out of the Great Depression to raise tariffs. Not going to work today. The idea is that it's supposed to raise revenues, but really it's just a transfer of wealth, because who are the people buying stuff? It's average Americans.
Yeah.
So it's a tax on average Americans to try to give the government more money to pay for tax breaks that we can't afford to give.
And against multiple countries, like you said, it's not just China, it's Canada. It's right. Other countries too. And you can't just move your manufacturing to Vietnam, because then Vietnam will be the next tariff target. Anywhere people move will be another tariff target until there's more manufacturing in the United States, which will take months or years to put into place. And plus, to start manufacturing certain things in the U.S., don't you need Chinese parts?
Yeah, you need Chinese parts and you need cheap labor. And we're getting rid of all the immigrants in America. And we're a few years away from robots being affordable enough and commoditized enough to actually put robots into factories.
More than a few, I think. That's like seven.
It's really interesting because there's a very large company out there that raised a ton of money to do manufacturing robots and AI powered. Mm-hmm. They originally had a go-to-market, I think, of 2029, like you're saying, even for the beta.
Yeah.
They revised it to 2026 because AI is moving so fast.
Okay. I could stand corrected.
But it's just everything is exponentially getting faster, but it's still ridiculously far away. And by the time that happens, we'll have a different administration with a different policy.
I think people assume that just because something's happening means it'll be widespread and cheap and everyone will do it right away, which is probably not the case. It's usually the people who can afford it can do it in 2 or 3 years.
And that creates a larger wealth gap too, because the ones that can afford it are dominating even more.
Well, it's the same thing with the tariff effect on Amazon sellers. The larger sellers, it'll cost them a ton of money, but they have the resources to survive it.
Absolutely. It's just going to increase the consolidation, the speed of consolidation that's been happening. We're seeing larger, more sophisticated sellers are doubling down and figuring things out and have the resources to figure things out. And the newer sellers are just giving up. So what we're trying to do is make sure that people are well-equipped from a capital perspective, look at the data, really understand how to disrupt the market, work on designs, be innovative, create IP and moats around designs if you can, and make sure you have enough capital to launch the product properly and be very forward-thinking in your cash flows. Negotiate really great payment structures with your factories. All of these things can lead to winning, but it's all a solid foundation of using data to make decisions, which is, I feel like we're pretty good at.
Sounds like you need a well-rounded strategy, all the more so now than ever.
Yeah, exactly. I think a lot of people are like, oh, it's a side hustle. Look, first of all, it could have been a side hustle in 2016, right? When you could basically take a picture in a light box, throw it up on Amazon and it would sell, right? You remember those days.
Yeah, 2015, 2016 was my first year consulting. So those are the first sellers I was interacting with pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, and everyone just had their shit thrown up there that they were just sourcing and they thought it was special because they slapped a brand on it on a white box or sent it in a poly bag. But the reality is, like, you need a real brand. You need to really put thought into how you're going to customize a product and make it more desirable, add more value and higher quality. And if you do those things and then you know how to do the keyword research to write the right listing, to send the right signals for ads and pull the right levers on the ad side, you can win. I think it's still a great opportunity, especially if that de minimis goes away. I think that's going to be really big for us.
I mean, hopefully that's gone for good. But like you said, time will tell. Right. Things keep changing. All right, Brandon, thanks for being our guest. Any info you want to share about Camp Ecom before we wrap up here?
No, I appreciate it, man. Campecom.com. We have a virtual ticket for the first time this year. So like you don't need to fly out to an amazing, beautiful beach and five-star resort in Cancun. I wouldn't want to make you do that. You can just get a cheaper virtual ticket to sit on both sides of the workshops. You'll get 28 hours of workshops basically for a much cheaper ticket price.
Right.
And then I could set up a code for you, Chris. So like, your members about Chris 20, we'll save everyone 20%.
Sounds good. We'll include it when we publish the podcast, which is going to be very soon. So great.
No, I always appreciate you having me on, man. And catching up, we need to do a more thorough dive into what's happening and why people are getting suspended these days and what you're doing to help them.
We will. We'll do a deeper data dive, suspension dive very soon. Thanks for coming back. Thanks for being on our podcast. Appreciate it.
Thanks, man. Good to see you.